Welcome to Crooked Stories Theater, where each week we bring you strange and quirky tales, stories with a small twist, an odd setting, a unique character. It could be a drama, a light horror, a sitcom, really any kind of story, as long as it's just a bit crooked. Welcome to Crooked Stories Theater. I'm Paul Knauer. Today we're featuring our very first table reads, two scripts from a talented writer brought to life by the Crooked Stories creative team. One of the goals here at the Crooked Stories Theater podcast is to elevate the work of fellow creatives while giving you, our audience, a chance to occasionally peek behind the curtains of the creative process. Now, there are many reasons for producers to ask for table reads: to test material, team build, assist in casting, check dialogue for style and flow. In fact, many times a table read is one of the earliest steps in the production process. For Crooked Stories, Table Reads offers us the opportunity to share even more stories with you in between the larger, time-consuming full productions that we're offering. Plus, they're just fun to do. As of first airing, both scripts that you will hear tonight are available for production. If you're a producer or director looking for your next short project to film, you'll find these scripts, particularly our second offering, to be budget-friendly, high-impact, easy shoots. We've made small changes to the scripts, adjustments intended to make the presentation flow more freely for our podcast audience, but the scripts were written to be filmed and remain available in their original to-be-filmed format. Our first script tonight features an actor making her Crooked Stories Theater debut. Eliza Runolfsson as the narrator, as well as familiar voices, Matt Candelario as John and Jared Griffiths covering three separate roles, Dub, Henry, and the TV news anchor. Let's get started.
Buona Fortuna, written by Kathy Cranford. Fade in. Exterior, marina boat dock, evening. A sleepy seaside fishing village. Commercial fishing boats saunter in from the long day's fish. Scattered among them, a few private boats whose large wakes threaten to swamp one small skiff. Old, creaky, and tired-looking could describe both the boat and its pilot, John Merritt, 50, who scowls and shakes his fist at the offenders while struggling to keep the boat aright.
Down my boat and there'll be hell to pay.
He pilots the hobbling boat into a slip, its fishing nets piled haphazardly on the stern, obviously empty. The boat sputters, backfires, then becomes silent as it floats the remainder of the distance into the slip.
Damn it, Estelle, you worthless hunk of lard.
He tries in vain to restart the now hissing engine, to no avail. From the stern side of the boat, the name Estelle withers, half-faded away in peeling paint. John wipes sweat from his weathered face, reaches into his pocket, and pulls out a cell phone. He attempts to dial, fails. Attempts again, then looks at the phone screen in defeat.
Phone service suspended. Please contact us about payment.
John mutters another curse and throws the phone overboard. It hits the water with a dull splash.
Good riddance, worthless piece of...
John throws the anchor rope around the pier and hoists himself onto the decking. He stomps away a few steps and then returns, gives a swift kick to the side of the boat, hesitates, remorse clouding his face.
Sorry, old girl. You know I didn't mean that.
He shakes his head, turns once more and walks up the pier toward a weathered statue, one hand extended, holding a plaque. Welcome to Fortuna. The smiling female goddess, the town namesake, seems to leer as John walks by. He tosses the contents of a thermos cup he carries at her, leaving dark liquid to drip down the face like tears.
Bitch.
Ahoy, John.
John turns to see another fisherman, his longtime friend, Dub, 60s, struggling with a net teeming with his catch.
If you're done with your catch, I could sure use a hand with this one.
Done. I'm done all right. I didn't catch one damn thing all day, other than a few cans of beer and a couple of pieces of plastic.
He pulls a crushed beer can from his pocket and tosses it aside as Dub looks toward John's boat and empty nets.
Ah, gee, John. That's some tough luck. I guess I was just blessed today. Couldn't even haul them all in. Had to cut one of my nets loose or risk sinking my boat.
He shakes his head in disbelief at his good fortune, but then considers John.
I'll tell you what, pal. You help me get this load into the dock market, and we'll call half it yours, yeah?
I don't need your charity, Dub. There'll be other days.
Oh, I didn't mean it as charity. But it does seem like you've had a run of bad luck lately, and I know you'd do the same for me, but...
He looks back at the loaded net.
I could still use a hand.
Sure. Let's get those fish out of there before they start to stink up the whole place, huh?
Dub pats him on the back in gratitude.
You know, John, you ever think about asking old Fortuna over there to change your luck?
He nods toward the stone statue.
That old beat-up piece of quarry?
Legend has it, she watches over us fishermen. A lot of folks around here believe in it.
Yeah, I know the legend. Never set much store by it. The last thing I need is to be asking for favors from a piece of rock.
All right, well, you can think about it. All she requires is an offering. You know, just, what would it hurt?
Dub winks playfully at John, looks up to the sky.
Moonless night tonight. That's part of the legend too. Might be worth a try.
Yeah, well, moonless or not, it's not me. I'm a lot of things, but I'm no gambler. And I'm no believer in fate or fortune, and especially old Roman goddesses. Besides, I just threw a cup of cold coffee in her face. That probably doesn't bode well for me, huh?
Dub shrugs and shakes his head.
Probably not, pal. Probably not.
Interior, John's house, night. John sits at the kitchen table at his modest, bare-bones home. A whiskey bottle accompanies stacks of envelopes and other papers littering the surface. John flips through them. Past due, attention needed, late notice, and the like, as he tosses each one aside, only to reveal another. Eviction notice. Contact immediately. John flings the envelope across the room and slams his fist onto the table.
Money, money, money. That's all life is about. If you don't have money, you don't have a life. You don't have nothing. Nothing!
He grabs the whiskey bottle and takes a long draught from it, wincing as its burn sears his throat. Interior, John's house, night. Hours later. John lies asleep, still at the kitchen table, his head resting atop the pile of envelopes. Dead drunk. He stirs, moans, and lifts his head.
Why not? What do I have to lose?
Exterior, Marina Dock, night. John staggers toward the statue of Fortuna, stops directly in front of her. Her face holds the same timelessness and disinterest. John looks up to the dark, moonless sky, then back to Fortuna.
You need an offering, do you? Is that it? A pay to play?
He leers drunkenly, fishing in his pocket. He pulls out several $1 bills and some change and dumps it into her outstretched hand.
That's all I've got, Your Highness. Will that buy me any of your good fortune?
The statue gazes ahead, unhearing.
Not impressed, are you? I'm used to that. I'm not a very impressive man. Never have been.
He stands for another couple moments, righting himself as he nearly falls over. Finally, he pats the statue and staggers back up the gangway into the darkness. Exterior, Marina Dock, day. John makes his way down the dock, obviously nursing a hangover. Haggard, still clad in the previous day's clothing, holding a hand to his head and squinting into the midday sun. Most of the berths are empty, the fishermen leaving long before daybreak. John stops at the slip where Estelle remains moored.
Ah, good morning, you old bucket of lard. I see you remained afloat overnight.
John gingerly steps aboard, still holding one hand to his head, and steadying himself with the other. He spies a paper note wedged between the wheel and the frame of the boat. He is perplexed, but retrieves it.
Your boat has been repaired, wishing you fair winds and following seas.
John looks around for who could have left the note, sees no one, looks back incredulously at the piece of paper, then lays it aside.
Dub has to be.
He attempts to start the engine, which fires immediately to life. Lacking the hissing noise of the night before, it settles into an even purr. John then spies his fishing nets, left haphazardly piled on the stern. They now lay neatly folded and stored in their appointed bin. Again, John looks around. Still, no one. He shrugs, plops behind the wheel, and backs the boat out of her slip. Montage. Afternoon passing into early evening, John hauling in net after net, brimming with fish. Close on John's face, fade to, flashback. The smiling face of Fortuna. Back to present. John shakes his head in disbelief.
No, it can't be.
Exterior, marina dock, evening. Estelle, engine still purring quietly, glides easily through the water, squatted with the day's catch. John guides her expertly into her slip. Other fishermen, unloading their own day's work, stop to stare at the mother load. John hops gleefully out of the boat and throws the tie rope over the pier.
Wait till Dub sees this.
Another fisherman, Henry, grizzled, 60s, steps to admire the catch and nods his approval.
Hey, have you seen Dub?
I guess you haven't heard.
Heard what? I've been out all afternoon.
Henry gives a downward glance, remorseful, then looks to John.
Dub's boat went down this afternoon.
What? Where?
Just up the sound, there.
John hesitates, speechless.
Boat's gone, but the Coast Guard, they got Dub. He's over at the hospital now. A little beat up, but he's going to be okay. Or so I hear, at least.
John is stunned. The note announcing the repair of his boat lays on the seat. He stares at it, disbelief clouding his face. Exterior, Main Street, early evening. John makes his way home on foot, his joy at his day's fortune overridden by his concern for his friend. Suddenly, he spies something on the sidewalk, a small slip of paper, green in color. He stoops, picks it up, turns it over. A lottery ticket, with selected numbers printed across the front. John looks around to see who may have dropped the ticket, sees no one. He studies the ticket again, shrugs, and places it in his shirt pocket. Flashback. Again, the smiling face of Fortuna. Back to present.
No way. Just no way.
Interior, John's house, night. John sits at his littered kitchen table, studying the ticket. He reaches for the remote and flicks on the small TV on the countertop. As the reception flickers, a news anchorman, 30s, TV handsome, is finishing up the evening news.
And finally, in local news, we apparently have a winning lottery ticket sold at a local supermarket. The winning numbers were 7, 9, 13, 29, and 37. No one has come forward at this time, but stay tuned and we will inform you when we know the lucky winner. State lottery officials say whomever holds the ticket is 100,000 euros richer this evening.
John stares at the screen, dumbfounded. He looks down at the ticket stub in his hand. From John's point of view, the numbers. 7, 9, 13, 29, 37. Exterior, marina dock, early morning. The eastern horizon brightens, revealing John sitting at Estelle's helm. He holds the ticket in his hand, still staring at it in disbelief. Henry approaches.
You're out early. Figured you would take today off after the landfall yesterday.
Any news about Dub? I was going to go by and see him at the hospital last night, but something came up.
He glances back down at the lottery ticket.
Dub is doing okay. Family's with him, but apparently he's had another stroke of misfortune.
Oh, no. Poor Dub. What now?
I guess you've heard someone in town won the state lottery last night. Eh?
John nods, inconspicuously sliding the ticket into his jacket pocket.
Well, as luck would have it, Dub's wife, she bought that ticket. Said she's been playing those same numbers all year. The ages of their two kids and three grandkids. Trouble is, she can't find it. Thinks it fell out of her purse on the way to the hospital to care for Dub.
John shrinks a little further.
Lord knows they could use that money with all the hospital bills coming and Dub being out of work for no telling how long, not to mention the loss of the boat.
John looks away, unable to look Henry in the eye.
That's terrible.
Henry nods and lingers for another minute.
Yeah, well, I've got to be going on. Those fish aren't going to catch themselves today now, are they?
John looks up, trying to force a smile.
No, it takes work and a little luck sometimes.
Henry nods in agreement and gives a parting wave as he walks away down the pier. Interior, John's house, night. John, again parked at his kitchen table. His companion, the whiskey bottle, stands half full within arm's reach. John holds his head in his hands. The lottery ticket, unredeemed, lays atop a new batch of late notices littering the tabletop.
I just needed a little luck to get me going, that's all. Just a little luck.
He reaches for the TV remote. The TV alights to a message across the screen. Service interrupted. Please contact us to settle your account. John throws the remote forcefully at the TV, takes a large swig of whiskey from the bottle, stuffs the lottery ticket in his pocket, and stomps out of the house, slamming the door with force. Exterior, hospital parking lot, night. John exits the hospital, head down, hands in his pockets. He strides toward the street ahead with purpose. Exterior, marina dock, night. John walks toward the head of the gangway and approaches the ever-watchful statue of Fortuna. He carries an object not fully visible in the darkness. He stops directly in front of the figure. The money he had left in her outstretched hand is gone, but for one dime. He picks it up, eyes the statue angrily.
You're not what they think you are. I know the truth now. Not just the goddess of luck, but also the goddess of misfortune. We call that running hot and cold around here. I gave you every last cent I had, just hoping for a little favor. And yeah, I got that favor. But it turns out you robbed someone else to give it to me.
John appears to await an answer. None comes.
I may have nothing of value in this world, but I'm an honest man. I needed that money, but it wasn't mine. To keep it would be to steal from a good man and a friend at that. So here I am, empty pockets and a clear conscience. I won't be asking any more help from you or anyone else for that matter. And just so you won't be granting any more wishes, here's a little parting gift from me.
He lifts a sledgehammer. He swings it with all the power he can muster. The statue, rendered in half, topples. John smirks in self-satisfaction. He stares in contempt. Something catches his eye. He stoops to the base of the statue, now partially upended. He scrapes away the debris, only to discover chiseled words, long buried in sand and sea salt. He runs his finger over the long-forgotten caveat.
Whatever fortune has raised on high, she lifts but to bring low.
John stands, raises the sledgehammer once more, and gives a final crushing blow to the statue of Fortuna. Fade out. The end.
Buono Fortuna by Kathy Cranford. Before we move to our second script, and I highly recommend that you stick around, I'd like to give a quick bump to simplyscripts.com. This isn't a paid advertisement, it's actually a thank you. If you like to read scripts, both amateur and professional, or you're a producer or director looking for your next project, simplyscripts.com is a must visit. As I said, they're not an official sponsor or anything, they're just nice people who happen to be friends of Crooked Stories Theater, who out of pure kindness of heart have supported our efforts in multiple ways. Thank you, Don and the gang at simplyscripts.com. And now, we present our second script for tonight, also from writer Kathy Cranford, featuring narration by Matt Candelario, Eliza Renolfsen as Rita, and Jared Griffiths as Dave.
The Price She Paid, written by Kathy Cranford. Fade in. It's daytime on a quiet street lined with stylish homes and well-manicured lawns that scream upper middle class. A late model SUV sits in a driveway. Dave Gill, 60s, closes the passenger door and gives it a gentle pat, takes a breath, then skirts around the vehicle to get into his driver's side.
Let's get this show on the road, shall we?
He looks to his passenger with a hesitant, almost questioning smile. Rita Gill, 60s, with a face that still holds beauty even with fine lines and wisps of gray hair falling across her forehead, smiles back at him.
So, when are you going to let me in on the secret of where we're going?
Dave smiles, clicks the audio on, which begins playing classic Joni Mitchell. Rita eyes him suspiciously.
That's my playlist. You've always hated my music.
This trip is all for you, honey. Music included.
Are you going to tell me where we're going or not?
All right. Where is your all-time favorite place?
I don't know. Williams-Sonoma?
Come on, I said where is your favorite place, not where you spent the most money.
Do you mean Crystal Beach?
Wait, hang on. Crystal Beach was always your favorite, wasn't it?
Always. Every time we went, I said I never wanted to leave it. It felt like I belonged there.
Okay, then. We're off to Crystal Beach.
Rita peers longingly out the SUV window at their home as they drive away.
Did you set the GPS?
Nah, I know how to get there.
That's what you said last time. And then I had to pull up a map after we got lost. And did you pack sandwiches? I mean, I always make sure we have snacks, but this was... I wasn't prepared, so...
Relax. We don't need snacks. We'll be fine.
Remember all the road trips with the kids?
Dave glances in the rearview mirror to a flashback. Two children, Dave Jr., 12, and Millie, 8, squabble in the back seat. Normal sibling banter. Back to present.
Yeah, I remember. They were the best kids. You remember the trip to Charleston? That awful hotel with the damp carpet.
Yeah, the kids didn't want to sleep there because they said it smelled moldy.
And you said the smell wasn't mold, it was, what did you call it?
Regret and broken dreams. But they were still too young to understand that.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry that you raised him so much on your own.
You were building your law practice. I did what I had to do. Being the mom was my job, and I couldn't have loved it more.
I know we've been through a lot, especially lately. There's so many things I regret, and I wanted you to know I'm sorry. For all of it. I know it's too late for us. God, how I wish it wasn't. It's like I knew you were suffering through all the late nights, me not being there for you.
The point when we stopped talking.
Only because I thought you quit listening.
You had an affair, Dave.
Dave swallows, blinks back tears.
My behavior was unforgivable. I know. But it didn't mean I didn't love you, okay? Actually, I don't even know what it meant. Other than I didn't deserve you or the life we've had. I don't know how to tell you how truly and deeply sorry I am for that. I hoped we'd move past it.
Rita remains silent, taking it all in, then looks directly to Dave.
We've been married for nearly 40 years. We made beautiful children, a beautiful home, and a beautiful life. I had some of the dearest friends and family I could ever hope for because of that life. For all those reasons, I chose to look away from the bad, from the pain, because all the good things brought me the life I had always dreamed of. When I look back now, I feel like any pain was the price I paid for the good times, for all the joy. I will always treasure the memories of that life with you.
And was it worth the price?
Knowing what I know now? Yes. I would do all of it over again.
Dave smiles sadly.
But that doesn't change what comes now.
Dave nods, still fighting the tears.
I'm still leaving you.
I know. But I was hoping we could have one last talk. One last trip together to our favorite place. That I could ask for your forgiveness one more time.
And now you've had your catharsis, and I do forgive you. Just as I had to forgive myself. I couldn't leave and have any peace at all without that.
Dave looks lovingly to her, smiles, then looks back to the road ahead.
You know you're lost again. You should have turned right back there where you turned left.
What will I do without you to navigate for me?
You'll use the GPS.
Dave shakes his head. Rita smiles. They pass a sign, Crystal Beach. The SUV pulls to a stop.
Well, here we are.
He smiles longingly and looks to Rita. She smiles back, reaches out and touches his hand.
Here we are.
Dave exits the vehicle, walks to the passenger side and opens the door. He extends his hand. Rita smiles up at him and places her hand in his. As her hand, then her entire form, transmutes into a mist and is consumed into a funeral urn, like a genie returning to a bottle.
I brought you to your favorite place, my love. Now you can stay forever. Just like you always wanted.
He cradles the urn in his arms and begins to walk toward the beach and the setting sun as we fade out.
The Price She Paid by Kathy Cranford. Available for production. If you're interested, contact us here at Crooked Stories. We'll happily put you in touch with Kathy. Thank you for listening to Crooked Stories Theater. Tune in each week for new episodes or even completely new projects. If you enjoy our stories, please help us spread the word and follow us on your favorite platform. And if you're listening on a platform that allows reviews or ratings, well, we'd sure appreciate the boost of a good review. Finally, we invite you to visit crookedstories.com for more information on who we are, our actors, our stories, and upcoming projects. You might even bump into a bit of bonus content, such as downloadable scripts. Again, thank you for listening. We hope to see you again soon.